The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shit shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, Conan, I want to start off giving out about TG Cahir, and I don't feel good about it because TG Cahir obviously show us games, club games especially, that we wouldn't have seen before until RT got on board this year. But they're really annoying me the last two weekends in a row. So they're playing the late game as the live game and then playing the game that came before their live game as the deferred game. And it's really bothering me. Like, I mean, the Boris Ali Killadangan game didn't come on last night until 5:45.
Yeah.
Waiting around all day, and that's not over then until towards 7 o'clock. Like, I mean, why can't they just show the early game first? Now, I complained about this on Twitter last weekend, and their outside broadcast director came back to me and he says, we have to work in cooperation with the county boards in relation to live or deferred transmissions of games on TG Cahir. That's fine. So some county boards, obviously it was the Kilkenny County Board last week was the issue. That was the first game at 3:00. And you'd love just to sit down and watch it. And obviously the Kilkenny County Board didn't want it being shown live because it might have affected the crowd. You can kind of understand that as well. But my thoughts on this are, if the county board don't want to play it live and it's the early game, put on another game at 3 o'clock. Yeah. Why do you have to wait till 4 o'clock to watch the first game?
Yeah, and then it's a bad move from the county board then if they're not getting that exposure. Like, that's a great thing they have. Yeah. The crowds won't be affected that much. Like, you know,
The people going to a county final will go.
Exactly. Like, when you're in that county, like, you're going to want to go to it and suck up the atmosphere. But when you're outside, that's when the interest is. And the interest is when it's live. Yeah. You know, I know we all wait around for county games. Now, it's not as big of a differential. What's the word I'm looking for? Yeah. It's not deferred as much as these games. But, like, I look at the highlights of these club matches. But I wouldn't sit and watch a full match of it.
Not when you know the result. Yeah. It's disappointing. And I try my best to watch it. And I'm like, Jesus, I have two children and it's Clinton towards 6:30 and I haven't eaten. And it's just, it messes up the whole day. I like to eat my dinner on a Sunday. Roast dinner out at my mother's house. I like to get a bit of dessert and I like to sit down on the couch and watch a club match. That's what I like. I don't want to wait till 4 o'clock to watch the first one. And I certainly don't want to sit down until 7 o'clock watching these games. Think of the viewer. Don't want to wait till 4 because you could get sucked into a soccer game then. You know what I mean? I think it's on TG Cahir to show the first match as early as possible and get the viewer into these matches. Like I saw on Twitter yesterday, there's a lot of GA people talking about the soccer.
Yeah.
Now, I know the Dublin final was pretty boring. Ballyboden always had it under control. But there should be no way GA people should be tweeting about soccer when there's county finals on, you know?
Yeah.
I think it has something to do with there being nothing on until 4:00.
No, I'd say you're right. I can't believe, like, remember on Thursday we were saying how we always have the same chat every year. I can't believe your Sunday dinner has come up twice now in the last 2 years.
But I don't remember this being an issue last year. I don't remember ever complaining about this before.
The time of the day is probably definitely an issue.
The time
that they're showing them.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So, like, I mean, with the county finals first, I suppose, to cover, and Ballyboden is the first one. This was a total bore fest. Ballyboden always in control, and that was always going to be the way. So you have to wait till 4:00, and now you're watching a match that Ballyboden were 1-5 to win. So, like, it was just a disaster of a day for the GAA. And all the time, there's other matches like Trillick and Derrygonnelly going to penalties. We'll talk to Conal Jones in part two about that. That looks sensational. And you're watching this and people are tweeting about soccer and you're actually thinking of leaving it to watch it.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be the way. We're not getting a good run. Club season has not taken off the way I would have thought. And I think the game's been chosen on TV and the timings of it are not helping.
That's it. Like, I think we're just missing the mark, because there's a lot of class stories that are happening here. Even you look at the Antrim Championship and all these stuff that are happening sort of on the outside, but they're not getting the main attraction, which would really help take this whole thing
now. I'm not criticising TG Cahir for that. Well, I would for choosing the Dublin final when that was always going to be one-sided. But at the same time, when there's so many county finals, it's not easy to find which one is going to be the story, because you would have said Trillick were going to beat Derrygonnelly. You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not going to know that turned out to be so dramatic. Obviously, Ballyboden, the Baskell brothers, it was Ryan Baskell got man of the match. Ross McGarry, who had a terrible start to the game, really rallied in the second half. They got 13 of the 15. Now they've won four titles in total. Saw the likes of Conal Keeney, Michael Dermacauley, Declan O'Matney have all won those four. Mm. So, like, I mean, it's a great time for Ballyboden. I didn't realise that they'd only won four in their history, and they've an All-Ireland club to throw in there and a Leinster club as well. So sensational stuff for them. They don't, on paper, seem to me the most... They don't have the players like Ballymun Kickhams or anything, but they've incredible work rate, and they almost have a culty work mentality. You know, that kind, you know, the small club mentality, when they're not a small club, but they seem to have that kind of fire in their bellies that maybe some of the bigger clubs can't replicate.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, we were going to play them in the championship this year, and the tactic was to not carry the ball through the middle. Normally, they don't carry it into their defence. But it's because they put on such a high press and they're so strong and imposing that we weren't allowed to kick, like, bring it into the middle. And we thought there was space sort of over the top, but the defenders were so good as well. Like,
yeah,
you know,
they're
so
very physically strong. And Anthony Rainbow obviously needs a shout out there. He's their manager. Yeah, so in Tipperary, Borisalee are champions after a 33-year wait, and our own Paddy Stapleton plays fullback for Borisalee. Joins us on the line now to talk about this. Paddy, how's it going?
Great, Willie. How are you?
How's the head, more like?
Head is questionable, all right, but look, absolutely, just so happy now, so I'll take one hangover for one day.
Fantastic stuff. 33-year wait, which is a long time considering Borisalee are former All-Ireland club champions.
Yeah, sure, look, and we hear about it, and, like, nobody says much does in Borisalee, but you feel that we haven't really reached what is expected, I suppose. So we're a long time looking at pictures in pubs and whatever through our life, so it's nice to do our own little thing for 1 year anyway.
Yeah. Did you think the chance was gone from you, you know, at your age? And obviously you made the final 2 years ago and you lost badly to Turles Sarsfields.
Well, myself, I thought we were coming okay as a club, you know. I thought we've youngsters coming, and, you know, you've Brendan, you've Ben, who with Tip, and they're a relatively young age, but I thought myself I was under a bit of pressure age-wise. But this year we were kind of building, we played in our final and we're terrible in it, but ever since that we kind of wiped the board clean and we kind of grew from there. So I think we were better and better in every match. So it was all timing, but I thought my own I was under pressure. If we didn't do it this year, I was wondering, you know, you're 35 next year, when's it going to end? So, I'll tell you, I was fairly relieved yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, I mean, they got it back to 2 in the second half. So it was nervy stuff, even though you were in control for most of the game.
Yeah, but sure, they got 2 goal chances in near the end as well. James Warmer pulled off some great play from the penalty. Another one cleared off the line. But I suppose we had our own chances too in the first half. But certainly with the win in the second half, and they kind of, that goal that they got, we kind of were in control at the time, and, you know, kind of really tested our heads as much as anything else, and what we had to do, because 2 inexperienced teams coming in for county final, very hard to know how each would react and how the pressure would suit them. But I was delighted how we reacted after, and nobody lost a head and nobody got carried away from themselves, and we just kind of tried to keep playing the ball, keep working hard, keep our distance, and thankfully it kind of worked out for us all.
Yeah, and was there less nerves this time than 2 years ago? Because I saw your manager Johnny Kelly saying the build up in the community the last time was at extraordinary levels. Like, I mean, had the town gone mad at that stage 2 years ago, and you tried to tone it down this year?
Yeah, well, it was strange because we were coming from nowhere, really. We hadn't been in a quarter final couple of years ago for 4 or 5 years, and before that hadn't been in the county final for 30 years, so it was gone a bit queer, really, and there's a lot of young hurlers. But this year it really just, you know, felt like another match. So you know, that was what Johnny tried to keep. There was no madness inside the dressing room or anything like that. So the players knew what I was about, but they just weren't getting carried away this time. But you know yourself, your first time doing anything, they're always going to be tense, but second time round was a little bit better.
A little bit easier. So he's been involved with Portumna, managed him to a county title, and was involved in their All-Ireland winning teams. He won a county title with Coolderry. I was only reading today that he was actually with Killadangan in 2013 and 2015, so he would have a great inside knowledge on them.
Oh, he would. He's known well, but, like, to be honest, we've actually played him probably maybe three or four times since Johnny was with us, and I think they've beaten us every time, 3 times anyway, I'd say.
Right.
So the knowledge didn't come in too much handy for the first few times, but I think, like, to be fair, Johnny has grown every year he's with us. Like, last year we had a lot of injuries, so kind of a nothing year, but he kind of realises what we're able to do and what we're not able to do, and I think that's his biggest strength as well. He's very, very realistic, and he doesn't try and push too much on players. Like, you know, he doesn't try and fill their heads full of too many tactics or too little tactics. He just has it on the money, and he would know how to kill it hanging lads as well. Like, so I was probably, you know, a bit bittersweet in meeting all of them afterwards, but he was fair delighted too.
Yeah, no, definitely. You mentioned the young lads. Your full forward line, Kevin Maher, Jerry Kelly, and JD, you call him JD, not James, it's JD Devaney. He cleaned up. He was playing against his teacher, but they're all under 21. So, like, I mean, these are the young lads that you knew were coming 2 years ago. I think two of them didn't play 2 years ago and they played yesterday.
Yeah, two were only 18, really. You know, they're county minors last year, so they're under 17 last year. But, look, you know, yourself, like, it only takes a couple of players on any club team to improve things. Yeah. And I didn't realise that they'd actually have the impact they did have.
They scored 110. They scored 110 yesterday between them.
Yeah, and to be honest, you know what, the likes of JD and Jerry, they're tough young lads as well as just being flyers. So I think they brought a lot of that. Like, it's very, very hard to get good club forwards and natural club forwards. And thankfully, a couple came along in the last few years. But Jerry is playing, in fairness to Jerry, Jerry's playing probably 4 years now at this stage. So he's kind of nearly experienced. But the other two are only, you know, little babies. But they don't seem like it on the field. They're very tough, good trainers. Great attitude, and I suppose if you have the good attitude, you always have a chance to be succeeding. But they'll keep the feet on the ground anyway. There's no fear of them.
Yeah, well, you'll make sure of that. I would tell you, when you get a full forward line of young lads, it's a nice one when you get packed them all in there, because they're the hardest fellas to get through, aren't they? When you get the three of them,
you can throw it down and toss them. At least they'll stop it, and they'll run, and they'll be keeping after the ball, so the ball won't come back to us down to us as quick. And that's, to be honest, actually that happened a good few times yesterday where Langan had it and the boys just kind of balked them and maybe slowed it up for a minute, gave my old legs a chance to recover.
What's this? What's with this mascot you have, the rooster?
Oh, yeah. I don't know where it came from. There's a few different stories, but that's our mascot anyway. So I was wondering what the ISPCA be onto us, but he was well looked after anyway.
So when did he start becoming your mascot?
Ever since I was around anyway, he was a mascot. But the tradition to have one there in the day of the county finals. And that was it, to be honest, even 2 years ago, like, you know, that adds to the whole craziness. Let's go and play in the first county final and talk about the rooster being out in the field. Like, you know, it makes a normal, what should be a normal game, very abnormal, like, and all that stuff added to it. But we're kind of used to it this time now. So actually, look, it's great. It's a kind of that bit of prestige and that kind of bit of around it, you know, kind of dry. I suppose it's a bit of showmanship and all that.
A little bit of theatre around the whole thing. I thought it was great.
Yeah, a bit of theatre, yeah. Yeah, no, it is. And I suppose I kind of only appreciate it now really afterwards and saying, and the people of Boris absolutely love it. And I think even all the county, kind of, it's a great novelty for them and something different. I suppose that's, you know, that's a lot of sport too, isn't it? Entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. So when you say Boris, so, like, I mean, is the town or is the village, is it Boris Lee, the whole place, or is there a place called Lee? It's just trying to get this clear in my head.
There's like, originally it was kind of like, you know, back in the day when you wouldn't have too many cars, it was Boris and Eilee. But, like, right, it's the one place, it's just like another part of Boris.
Okay.
Boris Lee, so that was it. It was Boris is near, like, the village, and then Eilee is up where the other church is, and, like, but that's only a drive out the road. Like, it was always kind of the one, but it was back when people couldn't travel down into the village for training to get a team going.
Ah, right. Now there's more houses and stuff. They've kind of nearly blended in together.
Yeah, and they can drive down to the park in the village, so it's all together. And I suppose you couldn't continue a team. Like, we don't even have a massive population, really, with Boris and Eilee, so... That's years old as well, the Boris Lee, for I don't know how long.
Right, okay. Come here, Paddy. Thanks very much for giving us the time. I'll let you back in to the pub there. I know you're standing outside.
Thanks a million.
Good luck. See, Conan, I'm nodding if I'm not fair. I'm not going to leave a man standing out in the cold, in the rain on a day like today, and there's pints flowing in behind him.
Sunday dinner and pints, that's all sacred for Willie.
All right, the last county final then at the weekend was Cora Finn, day 1-7-0. I told you this was going to happen, Conan. The favourites win the replay. There were a point down in the second half. I think Tuam Stars had the wind in the first half, didn't get enough of a lead. Cora Finn scored 5 in a row then, game over. 7 in a row. Not a huge surprise to me, but congratulations to Cara Finn. Not much more to say about that. Is it getting a little bit boring with Cara Finn winning in Galway?
Yeah, no, but I thought, like, the way some people were talking, that Cara Finn might just run away with it in the second game, but it's like it's still ran them tight against Shooting Stars. And
yeah, they were in it. But look, that's the local derby, and that's the home advantage. Well, it's a home, nearly home advantage for both teams, but that's the local derby and all that tradition and all that. I talked about the first day, and I called this going to be a close one. But anyway, congratulations to Cara Finn. Loads of time to talk a little bit more about Cara Finn. It's not like we haven't eulogised about Cara Finn enough in this show.
Kieran Malloy month is in a couple of months time, so
there was a big shock in the Leinster Hurling Championship. This is provincial clubs we'll move on to here now. So Carlow champions, remember we completely rode off St Mullins last Thursday. Just completely rode it. We actually looked ahead to the heavyweight title fight of Coola versus Ballyhale. I'm very disappointed that that's not going to happen now, but at the same time you can do nothing but congratulate St Mullins on beating Coola. That's an incredible result. Marty Kavanagh tweeted afterwards, he can't beat Hart. So, like, I mean, I think a little bit more than Hart got them over the line against a team like Coola. So it's just fantastic stuff.
Yeah, like you need Hart as the very bottom line. Like, but like you need to be set up well. Like you need to be fit. You need to everything. You need to be skillful.
Yeah,
and they had it all.
Yeah, and they beat Mount Leinster Rangers to stop them from going for three in a row in Carlow. So Mount Leinster Rangers were the top team in Carlow. So to come off stopping them for three in a row when they were outsiders for that, and then to beat a team like Coola, incredible stuff. The final whistle was kind of overshadowed by St Mullins selector Michael Ryan. I think he had a heart attack towards the end of the game, and it was looking pretty bad for him. His son Oisín had come on, and his son Oisín had to be substituted off. This is in the dying moments. This game is in the melting pot, and all this kind of thing is going on. Incredible stuff. Then Oisín went off the field because it was so serious. And St Mullins GA tweeted after the game, said, "We would sincerely like to thank you all. Thank you." They sent this tweet to Coola. They said, "We'd sincerely like to thank you for all your efforts today. It's genuinely appreciated. Special thanks to your wonderful supporter, Dr. Niamh Murphy. Michael's doing well, in no small part to your assistance." So thankfully, Dr. Niamh Murphy was there as a supporter and came down to help. And he looks like Michael Ryan looks like he's getting better. And that's it. That would have been a horrible, horrible end to a brilliant day for St Mullins.
Yeah, it really does show the importance of, I don't know what was used, if it was the defibrillator was used there, but like, you know, every club needs one. Having a doctor, like, you know, even just as a fan or as a club person being there, it's crucial. I coached the game one time and somebody from the opposition just fell flat on the ground and he was unconscious. And
a player or something?
Yeah, a player. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. And then there was a doctor, thankfully, just took it upon herself. He came in from the stands and ran straight over to him. And then she started screaming for a defibrillator. And I always remember just that eerie scream, like just going down the pitch, like, get the defibrillator. And she got him sorted and stuff, and he went to hospital, and he's grand now. But
it's amazing just being able to deal with a situation like that calmly. I remember being in a pub down in Tralee, and somebody just there drinking took an epileptic fit, and this person was shaking violently, and he was knocking tables and everything. And Jim McGuinness had a little bit of experience, I think, with a family member or a friend or something, and he just calmly held him down. Twisted it, turned his head in the right direction. He knew exactly how to do it. I was just standing there going, what the hell? I was terrified, like, violently, like, almost. It took all of Jim's power, just to, you know what I mean, to try and get him under control. It's just kind of being able to deal with a situation like that.
And the scary how many of you were just like the same with me with that situation. You're just standing there completely hopeless. You're just
useless.
Hoping somebody else will come to the rescue.
Yeah, useless. Anyways, Niamh Connell. So I got this one wrong. Like, getting ones wrong with Niamh Connell. I think they're doing it just to spite me. So, like, this was incredible. Incredible that they were able to play three county finals, right? Going to extra time in the replay and then win a second replay, play three games in 14 days and then have a three-day turnaround to go away from home. And all the travel is involved in driving down to play Castlerahan, who had played 2 weeks in advance, had won their second county title, so we're ready for Ulster this year, according to Keane Mackey, and go there and dominate them outside the last 10 minutes where Castlerahan rallied. But I'm sure Niamh Connell were out on their feet at that stage. Yeah. Jesus, I mean, my respect for Niamh Connell is going up. Now, I've come to the conclusion that I love Niamh Connell and I love Glenties when I don't have to watch them.
No, it is.
Is that fair to say? They're a great team. They're a great club. All those things. I love them. Just won't watch them on television.
Yeah, I'd say every club player all over Ireland is, well, fair play to them. Like, you know, wouldn't begrudge them that. We'd do it as well if we could. But yeah, it's unbelievable. I think I did predict them, although I've, like, you know, got most of my predictions wrong, and I think I just went with this one because we were getting a hard time from.
That's all right. Don't apologise for getting one right, Conan. That's not what I do.
Actually, I said I got this one right. Let's get that on the record.
So that's it. So fair play to them. In fairness to them, they must have gone out after that final. They must have taken it easy that night and taken it easy the next day. I'm only speculating here. I don't know. But we didn't see any videos or anything that, like, Guido started putting up loads of videos of their commiserate, of their drowning in their sorrows. And I was like, have Guido kind of lost a run of themselves in that they're believing their own hype, that I care about what happens in that pub outside of celebrating a win? I was interested when they won and how they celebrated it. You lose a match, I'm not interested in those videos. And one of the videos actually showed a group of them and they all had their phones out videoing each other. Like, have they sold out here? Do they think they're actually an attraction outside of... You're an attraction the day after if you've won something the country wants to see.
Yeah.
They don't want to see what you do the day after losing a final. Well, like, is that just me or is that... Am I being unfair on them?
Once you see all the phones out as well, you start becoming suspicious. Yeah. Like, it's like they're self-aware now. They know that they're a big story or they were last year. And whereas, like, last year we were seeing one person. It was almost like they were sneakily recording the celebrations and everybody just going crazy.
It seemed more pure. And plus, like I say, after winning an Ulster club or a county final, I'm massively interested in the day after that then.
Yeah.
Are you really when they lose? No, Niamh Connell were the story then.
Yeah.
You know?
To be honest, I liked one video when it first came out and I was like, oh, fair play to them. Look, they won together and now they're losing together. And I would have preferred that chapter to have been closed. And thought, you know, fair play to Guido.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like...
Well, the only person I do like in those videos consistently is Neil McGee. He just does his own thing.
Comes in with a drum there.
He's just doing his own thing. He's not taking videos. He's not looking to star in the videos. Yeah. He's a three-time All-Star and he's just in there one of the boys. You know what I mean? I watch the videos purely to see what Neil McGee's at in the
video. Well, there you go. Maybe there's still scope for more.
Yeah, maybe we just do Neil McGee.
Yeah, spin off.
Okay, so another big story in the Ulster club football is Cross McGlenn are out. Big surprise there because there's going to be new Ulster champions this year with Cross McGlenn going out. All four semi-finalists now have never won it before. So it's an incredible Ulster championship. There's no doubt about that. John McEntee obviously beat his former team and he seemed genuine. Well, he was genuine when he said he's sorry to see his club losing. Like, he's doing a brilliant job with Clontibret. Like, I mean, that's Scotstown and Cross McGlenn they've beaten.
Yeah.
And beaten, you know, convincingly enough. I was a little bit disappointed with this on Saturday night. I turned to BBC Northern Ireland on the television and I was saying, what? How have I got this wrong? It's 7 o'clock. It was online this was on. It wasn't on the television. I thought maybe I just read it wrong. I was disappointed to see it wasn't actually on the television.
Yeah, no, I wasn't surprised, like, you know, when I saw it, so I wasn't caught like you were.
Right. Okay, I think Cross had a lot of worries. But an interesting one, John McEntee was saying in an interview afterwards that the last time Cross McGlenn played Clontibret, he was actually playing and he was marking Desi Moen, who he's managing now. So I thought that was a nice little side story.
Did you see Conor McManus's score?
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. Like, the defending was class there. Like, I think it was Christopher Crowley who was all over him like a rash. He was aggressive and he's pushing him away from the post on his left foot. And McManus still scores. What do you do?
And he put it so high as well. You mean the reason he put it so high is because he was going to be blocked if he put it low. He actually did a skyscraper just because that was the only way he could get a shot off. And he kept the control on. He's a phenomenon, McManus. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, you don't often see him scoring those spectacular ones off the left as much. They're always off the right. But that, you're right. That was unbelievable. Any club team when they have the likes of him, you know. There's no doubt that they're going to be better. Is that like the understatement of the year? Ballygunner hammered 6 Mile Bridge. Interesting one here in that I thought 6 Mile Bridge might create a shock here. Don't know what, basing this on them doing pretty well against them 2 years ago. You know what I mean? And it's a Ulster club game rivalry. But they hammered them. They beat them really well. Desi Hutchinson, who we want to talk to on the show soon enough, he scored the opening 2 points. He earned 5 frees for Pádraic O'Mahony to score. And he also scored the goal in injury time just before half time, I think it was. Yeah, just before half time to put them 9 up at half time. this fella's only back from English soccer. Like, this lad is just looks like a sensation. And I'm thinking, what this lad is going to do to Ballygunner, because they're already a brilliant team and won Munster Club last year. And what's he potentially going to do to Waterford? So this is really exciting stuff that Desi Hutchinson is back and he's the real deal.
Yeah, some people are just class at everything, aren't they? Like, you know, we all know that person. Zach Toohey, probably for you, I'm sure he was brilliant at anything he turned his hand to. And now a new era for Waterford. And not to keep score, but I did back Ballygunner as well.
Yeah, we did. There's two. Yeah, I see. Yeah, you're getting starting to brag a little bit like me now, which is great. Rathdowney Earl, brilliant win for them. Hammered St. Rhinas from Offaly. Really hammered them out the gate. 4-16 to 10 points. We had Ross King on the show recently and he was talking about how they want to make an impression in Leinster and do Laois proud. Lovely attitude. And that's definitely doing Laois proud when they're beating the Offaly champions, which we love. We love to do in Laois, and now they play St Mullins. So Rathdowney Earl have a really good chance. Obviously, don't want to start talking. St Mullins have put me in my place last weekend. No, but you get my point. That would, I would probably put that match down as a 50-50 game.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Whereas the cooler one, you'd be thinking they wouldn't have much of a chance to get to the final. So it's brilliant for Rathdowney Earl, brilliant for Laois Hurling, which was so good this year. And for them to be able to get into a Leinster Club final, you know what I mean? Or potentially win it. It was just round off an absolutely fantastic year. Final one is, oh yeah, I saw a tweet this morning from Paul Geaney and he's tweeting Joe Brolly. And he says, this is the second time this year Joe Brolly has had a go at the GPA. He must be right too. He's the most clever man that has ever played the game and the funniest, possibly the best also. So I was wondering, what's this all about? So I read Brolly's piece in The Independent yesterday and he's having a go at the GPA again. And I don't know about the thing about the GPA. The thing that Joe Brolly hates most about the GPA is the thing I don't really care about too much with the GPA. Them making money and using it for player welfare and being commercial and all. That's bound to happen. The money that's swirling around in the GEA now, like, the one thing I would, and everybody would agree on, is they should make their salaries public so that we know that all that money that they're raising through fundraisers for players isn't going all, you know, not all, but too much of a proportion of it going into their pockets. So I accept that. But this idea of the players deserving a bigger cut of the pie, I'm in complete agreement with the GPA on that. I think that the GA would have no money if it wasn't for the intercounty players generating it for them. And it's going to come to a point where they're going to look for a small piece of the pie and they're going to get it. Well, it's like, inevitable. It's inevitable.
Absolutely. And the GPA is part of the GA and the GA makes a lot of money. And they put a lot of it back. But like, they have to use a lot of that money that they do make then in stuff like the GPA and in hiring people and in developing stadiums. And does Joe Brolly want just every single piece of money the GA makes just to go away? Like, they have to make money to keep
going. Generate it, yeah. Now, this is a private company. Like, you know, it's a private entity, the GPA. And he's got an issue with them using that money just for the 1%. But, like, the 1% pretty much fund everybody else. There'd be no facilities around the country without the intercounty game. It is elite, whether you like it or not. And I don't think, at this time of the year, we can enjoy club. Club gets centre stage. The reality of it is, there's a tiny amount of people at the games. It's lower profile. It's not able to generate anywhere near the same money. So, you know, the reality is it's a lower level and is treated that way. Like, I mean, it deserves its part in the calendar. We'll all fight for it. But at the same time, intercounty is the big show in town.
Mm.
And why would you want to argue with that? And why would you not want... The players that get to the very, very top of the sport and are the elite players, I didn't have an issue with them getting well treated.
Yeah, and like, you know, Joe's is obviously not stupid. Like, and he's done a lot of pieces about how much commitment players are putting in, and he doesn't like it, obviously, but we can't pretend like that's not happening. You know, so they do need help as well, and they need something back from it. And like, we talk about nutrition costs and everything else. Like, they're giving so much to be the biggest show in town, that we can't just pretend like they're not doing it, or we can't just tell everybody to train twice a week, because everybody knows if you train more than twice a week, you'll be better.
Yeah, so you're not going to go back.
You can't
go back in time. And another thing I don't like is when people say, well, will club players put in just as much of an effort? And maybe they do, but they're not as good. That's the reality. I could put in more of an effort than a Premier League soccer player at a junior level soccer player as player in Port Laois. I could look after myself. I could train. but I'm not as good. I'm nowhere near their level. So you're not comparing like with like. Effort is only a small bit. Talent is what sells. And the inter-county players have the talent and they're putting in that effort. And I don't begrudge them. I absolutely don't begrudge them. In fact, I hate people who begrudge the inter-county players, considering what they give this country every single summer. Every single summer. And don't get anything back for it. I'm not on that side. I would if the more they can get with of that money that's swirling around, I think it's better being given to the players than being given to GPA officials in wages.
Yeah. I'm interested in that idea of like club players putting in the same amount of effort as
some might, but that might be a lifestyle choice. It's not
very few. Like, think of the amount of effort that a county player puts in. I know club players work really hard. I like to think I do as well, but I know I don't work as hard as Brian Fenton or eat as well as he does. Different level altogether.
Yeah, it's a completely different level. One thing I did like in Brawley's article, and this is when I love reading Joe Brawley articles, is when he takes the piss out of the shrinks and the sports psychologists.
I didn't like that.
You didn't like that?
No, I didn't.
So I'll read it out to you. Last week, as a part of England's victory lap, there was an interview in the paper with England's visual awareness coach. So this reminds me straight away of our the glasses in Kildare.
The occlusion goggles.
So Dr. Cheryl Calder has patented iGym, which says improves players' peripheral vision, reaction times and coordination. The good doctor is a doctor of performance coaching who explained how her work has been crucial in bringing England to the peak of performance in these three vital areas of the game. I look forward to her interview next week. This is the clincher for me, and where Brawley's completely right. And I've said this before. Funny thing about these sort of doctors, they're never held to account. When a team wins, they're lauded. When they lose, they become invisible. That's a fact. That's true.
Mm. Would you not just get rid of them though when you lose, and then you try another fad? I get it, and it's funny enough, but like, you know, every team, especially at that level, are looking for marginal gains. England are as fit as everybody at the World Cup, and they're all eating as well, and everything else looked after. But now they're looking for something different. And then if it doesn't work, then you just try something else. Is that not what you
but
do?
But I suppose, where does that end? Because when you've tried that marginal gain, it doesn't work. You find another person, and these, even who cares? What's he doing? You're just bringing them in just to have another notch. You know what I mean? A peripheral, what is it? An eye gym, which improves players' peripheral vision, reaction times and coordination. An eye gym. Yeah. Now, this is getting to the level where managers are so desperate for that marginal gain that any Tom, Dick and Harry with a new fad can come in, because if the manager will argue that if it gives us a 0.1% chance of being improved, even if it improves three players, sure, it's a free for all for any sort
of like a manager saying that.
But like, I mean, it's a free for all for any sort of person who wants to come in, wacky individual. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Where does this end?
This isn't a great one for me to stand over. It's not a great hill to die on. But like, you know, Brawley's gone after sports psychologists before, and it's like, come on, like, you know, something that you obviously need in your sport.
Yeah, well, not all players need it, you have to say. Like, I mean, it's definitely not important for all players. I think if some players get some stuff out of it. But then, obviously, my argument is the different sports psychologists. So there can be some good ones, which can have value. And then there's some completely useless ones, you know. But they all seem to be making money out of it.
Yeah, I do. I think the problem with this, especially like something like this, the iGym, when it comes down to like a GA club team, because like I always think, you said 0.1%. That's all right to try it, I think. But when you're a club team, you haven't looked after the 99.9%.
You only have
0.1 to look after. If you look after everything else, great.
You're completely right. If a manager who's not good on tactics starts bringing in people like this, that would be the end of it for me. You know what I mean? You have to be very secure in your management to be bringing someone like this in.
Eddie Jones is very secure in his management.
Well, he was. He pretty much is. Yeah. Okay. Like, we'll leave it there, and we'll talk to Conal Jones next.
I said, "Are you going to get up or are you going to stay in bed?" I said, "We have a game there about 3:30. If you wouldn't mind joining us." Didn't even stir, like, didn't even go for the bag. Took his lie in, took his extra 5 minutes. It was like the snooze button. Hit the snooze button for another 5 minutes. Rolled out of bed. 1-7 that day.
Okay, so the biggest drama of the weekend was in Brewster Park, where Derry Gonnelly beat Trillick on penalties. It's the first ever time penalty shootout has decided a senior championship club match. The man who scored the winning penalty is on the line now, Conal Jones. How's it going?
All right, Conal, how's it going?
Good, good, good. Have you recovered from yesterday? That must have been dramatic.
Not recovered fully yet, but in a good place, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic way to win a game. Obviously, I don't think it's ever been done in Ulster Club football before, and I've obviously never been part of anything out there, so it's different. It's very tough for the losing team, but I'm delighted with the outcome of it, and it's a lot better for us than it is for Trillick, unfortunately.
Yeah, I saw the penalty shootout, so I was watching this live yesterday. Someone had it up on Twitter. And you must have played soccer. I know this doesn't happen in GAA because you seem very cool, calm and collected. You even got down on your knee. You took the first penalty and then it went to sudden death. So you came back up as the first penalty taker again. And you actually had time to get down on one knee and clean off your boots and all before you took the second one.
Oh, yeah. No, I've done that before. I had trials for Manchester when I was younger, so I'm only joking, Colin. No, the last time I played soccer was about 16. I used to play with Ballymannard, and I think I made the Fermanagh Cup team, the junior team, but that was the end of that. I had to kind of choose between the soccer and the Gaelic, so it was, I suppose, an easy choice for me from my background with the Gaelic.
Yeah, and were you feeling, your obviously legs must have been like jelly coming back up for the second one, because sudden death, obviously, the first penalty you have time, if you miss, you have time, your teammates have time to make up for it. Sudden death is a different story, right?
I wasn't too bad. You know, I'd kicked, you know, the free to bring in the extra time, so I was confident, you know. I wanted to hit the first penalty. You know, I just felt good about myself, and I wanted to take the pressure off our boys, you know, with other boys hitting the penalty. So I wanted to go first, and then I thought that it might, if I scored, you know, I was confident that I was going to score, and I knew if I did score, then that the pressure would be on the Trillick boys coming after us, that they would have to score. And the second one, again, I was happy enough, you know, I was confident myself, I knew exactly where I was going, and thankfully, the ball went where I wanted to.
Yeah, so you changed your mind. You put the first one into the bottom left and then you went off the inside of your boot, the far side, for your second penalty. Lee Brennan changed his mind the second one as well, but hit the post. So I suppose this is you play a game of silly beggars with the goalkeeper and you're wondering what he's thinking, and then you try to do the opposite, is it?
Yeah, well, we were kind of like, we would know Joe, you know, we played for like Limited and Challenge game nearly every year the last couple of years. I've actually hit a penalty against him in a challenge game. I went to the same side the first time. But we kind of just thought that we were kind of trying to read him there to see what way he was going, and we thought we knew that he seemed to be diving the same side for all the right footers.
Right.
So that's why he changed my mind and for the second penalty, and he did go the other way. So I don't know whether it's just pure luck or it's in my head, or maybe that was his tactic, you know.
Right, okay. So, like, I mean, did you practice penalties? Like, we know this is the way matches are being ended now. Is that something you would do at the end of training, or?
Well, I would hit the penalties for Derry Gonnelly, so I would always practice them. And actually, we had, before our first game against Cargan, we had Brandy and Sean had organised for us to come up early, one training session and practice them in case it did go to penalty. So that's, I suppose, we were confident that we had our five penalty kick kickers. They were all confident and we had practice. So yeah, I suppose we were lucky that way.
Okay, so like, I mean, the penalty takers were decided even before. I was wondering, like, maybe fellas would put up their hand after the second period of extra time, because I saw you had a corner back take one of the penalties, and I'd be thinking, if I was on a team and the corner back put up his hand, I would be like, here, put that back down there.
Yeah, well, Eamon actually...
It's Eamon McHugh. Eamon McHugh.
He does play a bit of soccer, so he does. He fancy himself all right. But to be honest, I actually missed the training session that they were practicing the penalties, but I always knew I was hitting one anyway. But the other four boys,
obviously had put their hands up at that stage and were confident and were allowed to hit the penalties at that stage.
Right, okay. So come here, talk to us about the game, because you're pretty much beaten twice in this game and came back out of nowhere on both occasions in normal time. Like you said, you got the free to equalise it, but you needed three in a row to get back into that, and you went four down then after the first period of extra time.
Yeah, it was a bit helter-skelter, all right. It was a great game, I think, for anyone in the stand to watch. Well, neutrals and Derek only ones anyway, but no, I think overall it was a very entertaining game. Trillick, or serious side, we probably got a lucky goal at the start of the game to kind of keep us in there at half time. Trillick then lost Matty Donnelly, obviously a huge, huge player for them, a real leader. But they pushed on themselves, you know, they pushed on. There were 3 points up coming in, and we probably thought we were down and gone, but we pulled back the last three scores. Got a free for the last kick to bring in the extra time. So like then, put the foot down again, 4 points up, coming in the second period of extra time. And I don't know how we did it. We managed to get 4 points then to drag in the penalties.
That was it. You didn't even need a goal to get it back, which makes it even more incredible.
Yeah, I know. You'd think at that stage that, you know, a lot of boys be thinking, we need a goal here. We have no chance unless we get stick in the net. But it's something we worked on training as well a couple of weeks ago, that if you do find yourself three, four, 5 points down with 5-6 minutes to go, is just to keep calm and don't try and rush it, and don't try and maybe go for the goal straight away.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. So come here, Matty Donnelly went off injured, but he came back on, and it was him that got turned over for the free you scored in normal time. What happened there?
Yeah, Matty, he seemed to get a bad bang just before half time in his knee, and I was close around by it, and he seemed to be in a lot of pain, you know, and it went off, and then I just noticed him. He was behind the goals we were shooting into there in the second half, and then next thing he was coming back on, and he was sprinting about. He as soon as he came on, he found a big hit, and we were thinking, geez, he must be all right. And then they were working the ball, I suppose, out of defence for the last free. And I think he just slipped, and then we just kind of got around him, and he overcarried the ball through that.
Right, I get you. So, come here, not many people would have given you a chance going into this, but you mentioned you played against them in challenge games. How did those challenge games go? And, you know, in your heads, how did you feel about the game?
Trillick's serious team, the challenge game, Trillick, to be honest, would have always been on top. Not much, but they're thereabouts. And the problem was that a lot of their county players weren't playing, because obviously Trillick were doing so well in the championship. So I suppose both teams never really had full teams playing each other. We never really had, you know, a full squad, either team, both days. But Trillick would be... you know, there would have been a step ahead of us, and obviously they were the favourites, I suppose, for also going into the game. So we had a bit of luck on the day, to be honest, Colin. You know, as I say, the goal, and then Matty went off injured, and we got a bit of luck, and we took our chances on the day, and, you know, just delighted to get over the line, like.
Yeah, so they're two big scalps, Carrigan and Trillick, that you're after taking this year. You've won 5 in a row in Fermanagh. You haven't been shooting the lights out in the Ulster club. You'd won good year, I think it was 2016, where you won a game, and then was it a replay against Cavan Gaels or something? I think they ended up beating you in a semi-final. Have you put more of an effort into Ulster this year, Conal, or is this just the way it's panning out?
No, I think it's just the way it's panning out. To be honest, Colin, it's probably just the way, I suppose, when your first couple of years of winning the championship, you know, you're really just kind of delighted to be winning the county championships again. And then I suppose we've won the county championship, you know, 5 years in a row now, and we just felt like we wanted to test ourselves in Ulster. You know, we're playing Ulster club teams every year, and I suppose you're learning. Like if you're not winning, you're learning. So we've learned a lot on the road, you know, the last 5 years, and thankfully, you know, starting to show some awards now.
Yeah, exactly. So have you been in with Fermanagh at all now since Ricey took over, or do you completely get a free run with Derry Gonnelly?
No, Ricey gave the Connolly boys and Diagonally boys a free run up the now, so thankfully we'll be missing another 2 weeks. this time of year, I don't think Connolly's actually started yet, but on the pitch this time of year doesn't be nice.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's tough going. But any talk about how Ricey's going to line you up this year? Like, I know obviously Rory Gallagher had his way of playing. Is Ricey going to take a departure from that, or is what's the talk?
I've no idea whatsoever, Colin, because as I say, we haven't. Ricey, in fairness to him, he's been great to us, and he's given us a free run. He hasn't expected us to be in any training sessions or any gym sessions running. So I've no idea what way he's going to set up, but we'll soon see, I suppose.
Yeah, well, here's a question for you. Would you like him to change it a little bit more attacking? The reason I ask you that is because Tomás Corrigan was on the show here last year, and he was saying he dreaded that style of football under Rory Gallagher. He couldn't enjoy it. Now, I know you're a different player to Tomás. Just wondering your thoughts on, you know, playing that way.
Well, it's a tough one. You know, we got great success under Rory Gallagher.
Yeah.
And the way we did, you know, for me as a player, that's my first Ulster final that I've ever played in. So I love, you know, getting to an Ulster final, the buzz of playing an Ulster final. I know things didn't turn out the way we wanted, but I think that was down to the us players really on the day, nervous. We didn't do the things we were supposed to do, but when you're winning games, when you're staying up in Division 2, you know, you're mixing it with teams who are seeded a lot higher than you. You know, I'm not going to complain, but you know, everybody's got their own styles. I'm sure Ricey's style won't be exactly the same as Rory Gallagher's. But I say we'll soon see what they'll play. I'm sure that the new rule as well is going to make a big difference. The attacking mark. It's something that I personally was in favour of the attacking mark, I suppose, as a forward and maybe as a bigger player. You always want to see that, so it's going to encourage, like, teams are going to take advantage of the attacking mark. It's going to encourage men to be kept up the pitch. It's going to encourage kick passers. So the game's starting to favour more attacking minded players. So I'm sure we'll see teams going along that way.
That's the thing. And I suppose with this mark, the kind of the zonal players have to push out on someone, or you're going to leave somebody free for a mark. You know, it's extended out to the 45. So there actually can't be any spare men around the field like there is now.
Yeah, I know. I think that the role of a sweeper is going to change dramatically, because there's, you know, it's going to be reducing the times that people are doubling up on men. If you can catch the ball clean, well, the sweeper's redundant. You know, there's no need for a sweeper, because the attacker's got a free kick at the goal. So it's going to, I think, defenders are just going to have to, I suppose, man up and be tight, and it's going to be a lot of one-on-one battles.
Fantastic, eh?
Yeah, well, suits
on
the
one
forward,
side, suits me and you, yeah. Come here, you've Kilcoo next. Did you have any celebrations last night, or are you back to training tonight, or what's the schedule?
There was a right bit of celebrating going on Diagonally last night, all right. And a mate of mine, good mate of mine from Kilcoo, was ringing me this morning just to see what the crack is. And I was saying, well, you boys recovered, and he was telling me that they weren't out last night, so it was kind of like, oh God, we better pull it back in here a bit.
Yeah, but they all say that. That's the mind games that are starting already, right?
Accurate. Look, at we're not stupid either. You know, Kilcoo's a serious side. I think they've won 7 of the last 8 down championships. They won 6 in a row. They're probably also content. They've been also contenders the last 5-6 years. And, you know, there'll be strong favourites now to go on and win Ulster.
It's wide open, though. Like, I mean, it's going to be a new winner, right? None of the four in the semi-final have won it before.
No, that's right. It's, you know, you would have had Flack Neil and Cross McGlenn, and Scotstown would have been, I suppose, the main ones over the last, and Guido, obviously, over the last couple of years. And Kilcoo would have been thereabouts, you know. So they would probably really fancy themselves to go on now.
Yeah, no, they definitely will. Come here, listen, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us, Conal. I'll let you back to work.
No bother, Colin. Thanks very much.
Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got, because I don't want no 1 minute
man. Okay, so Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and there's been some great performances this weekend in hurling and in football, but we're going to give performance of the weekend to Stephen Cluxton for doing an interview and winning player of the year. We tipped this last weekend or last Thursday. This was going to be fairly obvious. I have to say Cluxton came across very well in the interview with Joanne Cantwell at the All-Stars. No need to go across to Paul Flynn at all. I thought that was mad decision by Joanne to include Paul Flynn. You never get Stephen Cluxton. Why throw it out to Paul Flynn just to give a generic, oh, he's legend, he's great. Talk to Stephen Cluxton. Yeah. Get more out of him. Jesus.
And it's not like Cluxton was being shy. Like he was talking away.
Oh, he was being really good. Yeah, he was being really good. And he was a complete natural. And you'd wonder, you just wish of all the Dublin players, he might do a little bit more when you talk to him. But look, if you only get Stephen Cluxton once a year at a thing like that, and you'd love to get 20 minutes with him because that would be fantastic. Like, I mean, there's no doubt about his commitment to Dublin. It's incredible. Like, I mean, he's talking about a typical day this year would have been, this is his quote now. He says, a typical day this year would have been home from school at 10 to 4, leave for training at 20 to 5, for training at 7. He'd get there at 5. So he's only a 20 minute drive to training. Go out with my goalkeeping coach, Josh, who's here tonight. This is for you, pal. I really enjoyed him giving the shout out to his coach and saying, this is for you, pal. Very nice touch from Cluxton there. Then he said, go out from 6 to 7, do our stuff, back in for a team meeting and then start training with the team. So immediately I jumped out and saying, what's he doing from 5 to 6? Yeah. So he's obviously on a roller. You know, he's stretching out. You know, I'm just speculating here because he's accounted for all his time.
Yeah.
He lands there at 5 and he goes out with his goalkeeping coach at 6. He's rolling up and down. He's stretching. You wouldn't know what this fella could be doing. He could be doing yoga, but the preparation's through the roof. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and like, he did give the shout out to the goalkeeping coach, but he's also getting there an hour before training every night as well just to help. I'm sure it's a pleasure for him. They work with the greatest of all time, but... Oh, it's brilliant. Like, and he was talking, even he was so open about maybe, like, whether or not he's going to stay on next year as well. And he said, I don't look at it like what is left to win. I look at it, am I going to be hungry enough to win my place in the team?
Yeah.
And then he probably assumes I have to do this work to win my place in the team.
He's staying. He'll go with Jim Gavin, I reckon. I don't think Cluxton going. He's not going anywhere. I'd say he'll stay. Why not stay? Are you mad? Like, I mean, this man, he's fit. He's playing brilliantly well. The only thing that could stop him is family commitments. But looking at his schedule there, he's home at 10 to 4.
Yeah.
Instead of going at 5, maybe stay with the family another hour and do your rolling session while at home in your own house or something. I don't know. But
Jim's called an all 4-hour session tonight.
Maybe like scout house. I have to pull some people up who were talking about this being unbelievable commitment. I would say he's very dedicated. But when I was playing with Leash, I worked up John Rogerson's key. So I used to leave work at 5. Work would go on until 5:30, but I'd have to talk them into leaving me out at 5. They wouldn't have been big into GA. So I'd come in at 8:30 in the morning to make up that half an hour.
Yeah.
I would run from John Rogerson's Quay down to Gardiner Street, run. I would get into my car and then I would drive up Gardiner Street and I would come back across through Phibsborough and in all that traffic anyway. So it would take me about an hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours to get down. And then I would land to training, bang on time to go in, get your gear on, and you might come out on the field a little bit late and get extra laps when you get after training for being late. What's commitment? What do you think? Do you think that's more commitment, or do you think landing to training 2 hours early to do a little bit of enjoyable work with your coach is commitment?
I think they're both spectacular. Like,
do you get me though? To me, I would love that routine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't need to go 2 hours early, but he does because he loves it. And, like, I mean, that's a commitment in a different way. It's not hardship, but it's a different type. I think it's a dedication.
Yeah, he's choosing to do that. Like, most people would just enjoy the time off and not train or whatever, like, but he's choosing to train with his time off.
Yeah. So it was nice to see him win a player of the year. It really was. It was nice the way he came across really well. I know Cluxton. I played with him. I would have clashed with him over... not given Parnell's the time that I wanted him to give Parnells. And that's probably where we clashed, and he used to give out a lot, but like that's his personality. But for Dublin, he's on the other end of the scale. So like you can see, obviously his brilliance and him being your teammate is fantastic because he's so good. But you can see why the Dublin players love him, respect him. And he, like, I think Joanne Cantwell said at the start that no one in the room, you know, hurlers or footballers would, or something about having great respect for him. And they would, like, I mean, there's no doubt that he's an incredible legend at this stage of his career.
Yeah, and like you talked about this routine earlier in the year and how that influenced the rest of the squad, because they started showing up earlier then as well. And you think about Cluxton, how good he is and influential he is on the pitch.
So for my information was, it was first it was Cluxton and then Johnny Cooper. two lunatics, like, yeah. Two absolute dedication is their middle names, and now it's filtered, it's infiltrated the whole squad.
So it's like that is the most important job for Jim Gavin, not because Cluxton's the best keeper in Ireland, but to make sure that he's there because he's just such a positive influence on the rest of the team. Yeah. He's keeping them all in check like that.
Keeping them all in check, exactly. Shane McCallum won the Hurling Player of the Year. No surprises there. Great to see him. He'd been nominated in 14, 15 and 16. So fantastic news for him. We talked about the Hurling All-Star last Thursday, Conan. Obviously Sean O'Shea and Adrian Mullen got the Young Player of the Years. So we will talk quickly about the All-Star team here before we go. The big talking point obviously is Brian Howard at centre back, but is it even a talking point anymore when you see some of them? We've seen lads picked in midfield and forwards. To pick him at centre back, you know my thoughts on this, I'm completely against that. It's a cop out. I know the answer will be, who would you have changed? Well, I'll tell you straight away who would have changed. I would have changed him in for Michael Murphy, and I'd have put him wing forward, and Michael Murphy unfortunately would have lost out to Brian Howard, because Brian Howard had a better year at wing forward than Michael Murphy. So that's a very simple choice for me. I don't see Michael Murphy getting in ahead of David Clifford, Cottle McShane or Conor Callaghan. So you'd have to say Michael Murphy, despite being really good in, especially against Kerry, is the one stands out for me. He was brilliant. Not so great against Mayo, you know, in Castlebar, which was an All-Ireland quarter-final.
I thought he was good that game. He missed a couple, but
it was
him and McBurty. McBurty was worse than him, but they were really to the fore in that shootout. Like between Mayo and Donegal, yeah. It was always Murphy if they were going to get into it.
He did all right. He won the penalty and got a point, but missed a really bad one at a crucial point. Not talking Michael Murphy, if you were to pick any of those six forwards of who I would pick if I was picking a team tomorrow, Michael Murphy would be the first one I would pick. I'm saying that a really difficult choice has to be made sometimes.
Yeah.
And that would have been the really difficult choice that I would have made. I'll take Mannion being picked wing forward, no problem. The full forward line picks itself. If you're a defender, say you're John Small, Tadhg Morley or Donal Keown, Keoghan.
Yeah.
And you see Brian Howard being picked at number 6, I'd be very disappointed with that.
Of course, yeah. And like, yeah, you might argue that if I was playing the forward line, I could have showed off more and then got my place in the backs like Brian Howard did. But like, I think putting Paul Mannion at wing forward would be the same sort of thing. Not as bad. I would think you'd have to leave him out. Like, it sounds crazy because he was class, but he wasn't a wing forward. And
he wasn't as good as David Clifford.
Yeah,
it's up against Clifford at 13, but we know. You see, you will accept. I don't like it. I'll take your point. I would have had Mannion's up against Clifford, and he's gone. We've explained this before.
Yeah.
But what I can't accept is a forward being picked in the back.
Yeah.
And Brian Howard might have gone back once or twice. He doesn't deserve an All-Star at centre back. No. It's an insult to centre backs. But just made me think the lack of outstanding centre backs in the game
now.
Who was the outstanding centre back? There wasn't really an outstanding centre back. Like, you're looking at John Small being a wing back, Tadhg Morley being full back, Donal Keown being a right half back, probably closest to the action.
Yeah.
None of the top teams have the outstanding set. Dublin swapped them around since Keane O'Sullivan started kind of going. Kerry don't have a dominating centre back. It could change from game to game. Tyrone don't have one. They're the top three teams in the country. It's mad. Galway don't really have your man Daly this year, who might make it as a regular centre back.
Yeah.
You're even struggling to find teams that have a regular centre back. Mayo swap it around. You know, well, and Boyle probably a little bit more regular this year, but to try your man Plunkett, Lee Keegan can play there depending who they're playing.
Vaughan
could go. Like, I mean, what happened to the traditional centre half back?
All started running the ball. Like, that's probably, you know, we worried about the corner forwards going out of the game, but the centre half back who knew when to run and knew when to kick is becoming less important because he's not dictating the play anymore. He's just one of the people who are carrying it up the pitch and hand passing it off.
No, that's it. When's John Small going to get an All-Star? John Small has the unenviable job of marking the most dangerous half forward on the opposition, whether it be Shane Walsh, whether it be Stephen O'Brien, any of these, always does well on them. Peter Hart puts him in his pocket, always does well. He's unassuming, he's not flashy, and if he goes through his career without getting an All-Star, it would be just wrong. He deserves an All-Star.
I think so, yeah. And like, I was going to say, well, you look at Patrick Durkin and Jack McCaffrey there, he doesn't deserve one over them, but he does.
Well, I think he might have deserved, I might have put him in ahead of Ronan McNamee at fullback. Like, he deserves it. Like, okay, you're going to have, your Ulster hat is going to be on you there now. But the point I make, obviously, the John Small won't fit into that halfback line the way it's picked with Patrick Durkin. He could have played centre-back instead of Ryan Howard. What am I talking about? Yeah, so he wouldn't get one of the two wing-backs, but he could have got the centre-half-back position. I don't think anyone have argued even Dublin getting eight after the five in a row. Like, yeah. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But there is an obsession of having to give Donegal one. I remember last year, the same thing, because they won in Ulster. Nobody cares about provincials anymore. The big thing is getting to the All-Ireland. Provincials, I know Ulster will still say that it is a big deal, and it is a big deal, but that doesn't mean the All-Stars need to reflect it. Donegal would probably pass up on an Ulster to get into an All-Ireland final next year. You know, that's fairly obvious, but like, traditionally, if you won a provincial, because you go straight into All-Ireland semi-finals and All-Ireland finals, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, you're only missing two games. So, you play in one of them.
Yeah.
So traditionally, you only miss one game. So a provincial champion really had that prestige that they deserved to be an All-Star. I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
No, and like Mayo got to the semi-final, and they got further than Donegal, beat Donegal, won more games, but they're nowhere near. Like, you know, like Patrick Durkin got in, but they're nowhere near. We need to give Mayo player on the team. I come back to the Howard thing, like. I know it's hard for journalists because somebody has to miss out and they might get defensive over it, but if you leave Howard out and put John Small in, say, and then me or you say, where's John Howard? Then they can just say to us, well, who do you want out, Mannion or Murphy?
Where's Brian Howard?
Yeah, like, you know, or like, you know, Stephen O'Brien was in, and it's just more of a straight shootout. It's like you place for place.
I think it's easier for them.
Yeah.
It's an easier sell. It's an easier thing to stand over and say, look, it came down between David Clifford and Paul Mannion, and Mannion lost out on this one.
Yeah.
You know, or it came down to Brian Howard versus Michael Murphy, and Michael Murphy lost out as a wing forward. No, well, Michael Murphy would have been up against probably Cottle McShane or, you know, Sean O'Shea, somewhere up the middle, or David Moore or Brian Fenton. Do you know what I mean? But here's what I think. Stephen O'Brien has been absolutely, I think he's the one that can be most disappointed.
Yeah, put him centre back. Like, if you're looking to pick the best players.
Yeah, why not? You know? Why not? If that's the game, why not put Stephen O'Brien in ahead of Brian Fenton? Because in midfield, I'll tell you why. Stephen O'Brien was favoured for player of the year before the two All-Ireland finals. He didn't have two great All-Ireland finals. Neither did Fenton. Yeah. Stephen O'Brien was better than Fenton up until the All-Ireland final. So if you're going to do all these things, why not put Stephen O'Brien into midfield at the expense of Fenton? Why did Fenton get an All-Star even though he had two, you know, underperforming finals, by judging by his standards, and not put Stephen O'Brien in because he had two underperformances in All-Ireland finals when Stephen O'Brien was way ahead of Fenton before the two finals? How does that make sense?
I don't know. And like, you know, Cahill McShane didn't have two good All-Ireland finals, neither did Michael Murphy. You know, these boys, because they didn't make it to the final, it's safer for them.
It's safer for them. Mm-hmm. So if Kerry had lost to Tyrone in the All-Ireland semi-final,
Stephen O'Brien gets an All-Star.
Definitely. That's harsh, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is.
It really is harsh. Shane McGrath was talking last Thursday about having some sort of a point system so that it's very clear how many points you've built up over the year. You know what I mean? I kind of question him on the point system. It's not that easy to implement, but if there was some sort of a numeric tracker to know why Stephen O'Brien lost out in those two finals when he would have been ahead of teams that lost in set, you know what I mean? Why he's losing out on getting further.
Yeah, did he lose points for the final? Or
he would have had to lose points for not playing well rather than not gain points.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And he's still ahead of people. He still had a better season than others.
Yeah. So they're the big ones. Brian Howard getting a defensive one. Stephen O'Brien not getting picked. In fairness, I don't think I've seen a forward line more competitive for an All-Star this year. Yeah. Like, you have Jamie Brennan and Connor Cox, who would have been front runners into provincials, and, you know, they didn't do enough. But at the same time, it was definitely a forward line that wasn't going to be easily picked. So that's it. It's the yearly complaint about the All-Star. It's not going to change. This is the way to do it now. And that's it. So listen, that's it, Conan. Nothing else to say about the All-Stars now?
No, it's like it's November. We're complaining about All-Stars.
Groundhog year again. Yeah. Right, listen, we'll be back on Thursday and we'll take a look ahead to the weekend's action. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance of goal, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today. Because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later when we're not alive.